Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California's Voices of Reform Project, a project that promotes informed discussion of issues related to California state governance and civic engagement. I am Rebecca Avila, Associate Dean of Administration here at USC's Annenberg School for Communication. I want to thank you for joining us for our program, Campaign Finance Reform, Southern California Cities Take the Lead. In this discussion, we will consider the experiences of three Southern California cities, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, and Santa Monica, where people are acting locally to change the rules related to funding political campaigns. The Commonwealth Club's Voices of Reform programs are made possible by the generous support of the James Irvine Foundation, the Wallace Alexander Gerbode Foundation, the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, and Commonwealth Club members. Today's program will be moderated by Tracy Weston. Tracy Weston is the founder and CEO of the Center for Governmental Studies. The Center for Governmental Studies has written several reports on public financing and has drafted a number of public financing laws for jurisdictions across the country. In addition to his work with the Center for Governmental Studies, Tracy Weston is an adjunct professor of communications, law, and policy here at USC's Annenberg School for Communication. And now I am very pleased to turn the program over to Tracy Weston, who will introduce today's panelists and moderate today's discussion.
Thank you, Becky, and welcome to everyone. As we just heard, today we're discussing the experiences of three Southern California cities that are acting locally to change the rules related to the funding of political campaigns. Now, before we get to the very distinguished panel, let me introduce the issues briefly. Basically, cities can consider several options for campaign finance reforms. First, disclosure laws, which simply require candidates to publicly disclose all of their contributions and expenditures. Second, contribution limits, which cap the amounts one can give to a candidate. Third, various forms of public financing, which allow candidates to accept public money for their campaigns so they don't have to raise it privately. Candidates accepting public money have to agree to keep their expenditures under certain limits. And of course, there are two types of public financing. A, matching funds, in which candidates raise small contributions which are matched by public funds, and B, full public financing, sometimes called clean money, in which once candidates qualify, for example, by raising signatures or small $5 contributions, the candidate then receives full public financing for their campaigns and are prohibited from raising any additional money. Now, fourth, some cities, for example, Los Angeles, and Santa Monica, also offer candidates free opportunities to videotape statements which are run on the city's government access channels as a form of free outreach. And finally, of course, some cities have created ethics commissions to oversee and enforce their campaign finance ordinances and regulations. Now, it's probably an overstatement to say that a tidal wave of campaign finance reform, especially public financing of campaigns, is sweeping California cities. But California cities are in the forefront of this movement. In Southern California, for example, Los Angeles and Long Beach have well-established public matching fund systems that have been in place for up to 15 years, covering mayor and city council races. And in Los Angeles, recently, three city council members have proposed upgrading LA's system to full public financing or clean money, and this proposal is under study. San Diego is considering a clean money system. Santa Monica City Council has passed a resolution to study public financing and come back and decide whether to adopt it at the end of next year. And in Santa Barbara, the mayor and at least two city council members are considering an array of campaign finance reforms, including, possibly, public financing. And, of course, at the statewide level, Proposition 89 on the November ballot in just a couple of months would create a system of full public financing for statewide and state legislative candidates. So we are awash in campaign finance proposals, and to a certain extent, Southern California is taking a very active part. Now, we're very fortunate today to have with us three very different perspectives represented on our panel to help discuss campaign finance reform in Southern California. First, Leanne Pelham is the executive director of the City of Los Angeles' Ethics Commission, where she heads a full-time staff of 31 employees. She's been with the Ethics Commission for 15 years, since LA adopted its campaign finance reform in 1991, so she represents the voice of campaign finance reform experience on the panel. Second, Mike Hackett is the assistant to the City of Santa Barbara Mayor, Marty Bloom, and is assisting the mayor and city council in addressing municipal election reform issues. In his former life as a private attorney in Tulsa, Oklahoma, Michael won major election reform cases and today can give us the perspective of a city in California, Santa Barbara, which, by the way, is my hometown, which is considering adopting campaign finance reforms for the first time. So Michael represents the voice of an insider in a city looking to decide what should we do. And finally, but certainly not least, Tia Skolsky from Santa Monica is the former chair of the Commission on the Status of Women for the City of Santa Monica. She's been involved in promoting the adoption of ranked choice voting in Santa Monica and encouraging more women to run for political office. So Tia represents the voice of the outside activist that wants her city, in this case Santa Monica, to adopt campaign finance reforms. So we have a LA insider, a Santa Barbara insider, but trying to decide what to do, and an outside activist in Santa Monica, and you're going to hear all three perspectives. So let's start with a question to Leanne, the voice of experience. Why should we care about campaign finance reform at all? What's the big deal? Why have it?
Very good question. Thanks, Tracy. And I just want to say thanks to the Commonwealth Club for the invitation to be here today on this panel. From my perspective, campaign finance reform is really the issue of all issues. When we're in a democracy and we're electing people to make important decisions and weigh competing claims about complex public policy questions, I want to make sure that the systems we have are ones that enable people to use the integrity and the judgment and the skills that they bring to that job, and not have the calculation they make about those decisions have anything to do with either where the money came from in their last campaign or where the money will come from in their next campaign. And so for me, from my perspective, I think campaign finance reform is critical. It's got to help us reduce the appearance of corruption in the system, or the appearance of corruption or the reality of corruption. It also needs to be there because it helps reduce barriers for people engaging in the system in the first place. Our experience in LA shows that we have more people participating and wanting to agree to limit their spending and personal funds. And it's also a way to encourage people to be involved, whether as candidates or as voters, active voters, because when people spend less time having to worry about money and fundraising, they can spend more time on the important issues and engaging the public to get them interested in how we're going to solve some complex problems.
Leanne, thank you. Now, Mike from Santa Barbara. Why is Santa Barbara considering campaign finance reform at all? I remember it as a bucolic city with not many problems. I mean, what problems are you seeing that need to be addressed?
Well, I think that one of the major issues right now is the increasing expense of running a campaign. In the last election, and Santa Barbara has its election, it's the only jurisdiction that does this in Santa Barbara County, in odd-numbered years, the top three city council winners spent between $65,000 and $100,000, which was an increase of about 50% over the preceding election or two. So that has a lot to do with it, and the desire, I think, of candidates not to have to go out and beg for money, to concentrate on getting their message out and getting out and campaigning. I think those are the and that, plus we have a pretty progressive group of individuals of the seven city council, the mayor and the six city council members that are there, a very progressive group of individuals. And I guess I should say, even though I'm an insider and I work for the mayor, my comments here today are my own and don't necessarily reflect those of either the mayor or the council members who are currently considering election reform. So
I'd also add that our own studies looking from 1950s up to the year 2000 showed that at the state legislative level, campaign finance expenditures tend to double every two-year cycle. So what that means is that campaign finance expenses are going up at an extraordinarily faster rate than, say, the cost of living, which means that anyone thinking about getting into politics, looking forward into the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you're looking at staggering amounts of money to raise. Tia, how did you get involved into this issue in Santa Monica? Why is campaign finance important to you?
The commission wanted to investigate if there's any barriers for women running to for office in Santa Monica, especially for city council. And we looked into it and came up with clean money, campaign financing reform, and also Santa Monica ranked voting were two of the solutions to the problem.
Well, and I know you have a history of involvement in getting women into politics. Is what part is campaign finance in that? Is it harder or easier for women to get into politics with campaign finance reforms?
We're finding if there is public financing reform, that it'll be easier for women to get elected into office.
Mm-hmm. Leanne, from Los Angeles' point of view, you're working with a law that's relatively mature. It's been there for 15 years. It's matching funds. Overall, what has worked? What hasn't worked? What's good about it? What problems have you seen? And you're also kind of passing this message on to Santa Barbara and Santa Monica. What can they learn from your experiences?
Well, I think our experiences tell us that it was critical to have a very active, engaged citizenry in putting a campaign financing proposal together in the first place. We had a Blue Ribbon Citizens Commission that was established by then-Mayor Tom Bradley in the late 80s to look at what kinds of recommendations and systems might make sense in Los Angeles. But the voice of those individuals and the strength they brought to the process was, I think, critical in helping the council, the legislative body in the city, really force a good look at the issues. It was a very long process, I understand, 3 days of full testimony and hearings on what proposals we should have. But that that was an important dynamic to bring the issues to the forefront. They had not been brought prior to that point. I think when we look back at what works in our city, as Tracy mentioned, we have a partial public financing system. That means if you limit your spending and your personal funds and agree to debate and qualify in certain ways, you can get limited public money to run your campaigns. And it's designed as a system to really emphasize the role of the relatively small donor. We've seen over time that the relatively small donor really is the people, is the group of people that candidates rely on overwhelmingly, individuals versus non-individuals in our system. So that, I think, has changed from the mid-'80s when Tracy's group issued reports saying it was largely businesses and unions and PACs who gave campaign contributions to individuals running for office. I think the other interesting dynamic is we've also seen a less of that dynamic growth that you talked about, Tracy, here in the city. We clearly have races that still are in the stratosphere when it comes to spending, and there are other issues that weigh into that. But I think the fact that we've seen actually a leveling off to some extent of how much candidates have to spend to get their message out there, while seeing a floor being supported for candidates who may not be part of the system, we've seen a de-escalation in those expenditures and a narrowing of the gap over time, which were promising signals for a system that we have.
Mm-hmm. Mike, in Santa Barbara, I know that you're looking at a number of possible options for campaign finance reform. From the perspective of a moderate-sized city, what's the population?
Santa Barbara is between 90 and 100,000 people. It has about 44,000 registered voters. About 25,000 of those voted in the last election in November of last year.
So a moderate-sized city, somewhat comparable to Santa Monica, actually.
Right.
From the point of view of Santa Barbara, what are the options on the table in terms of remedies? What do you think is something the city might consider adopting?
Well, I think there's about all the options are on the table right now, fortunately. Santa Barbara is unique to some extent in the sense that it's a charter city, so the city council can adopt election reform by ordinance rather than having to go to vote of the people, which I think is the typical way it's happened in most cities. So I think they're looking at the regulatory approach, at capping contributions, at a possible either partial public financing or full public financing. We really have to. The ordinance subcommittee has been meeting for the last several months, and I want to thank the members of the Center for Government Studies, your group, which has helped tremendously in giving us different ideas and exploring options there. We're going to be having a big public meeting on October the 11th at our downtown library. So if anyone's listening to this from the Santa Barbara area that's interested, I'd encourage them to come out at 6 o'clock that evening and do that. But one of the main issues for the city of Santa Barbara, as for any city, I guess, is where does the money come from? So if we're looking at having to expend $200,000 to $400,000 a year and put it in a special fund for public financing, even though that may only be less than 0.5% of the city's $98 million general fund budget, it's still money that has to come from somewhere and be allocated. And when you have We have a very, you know, the councilors are good stewards of the of public resources. When you have competing interests, you know, the public employee union demands, just the general demands of government, it becomes a very difficult issue. And I'd be interested in hearing from other people about their experience on that, because I think that is one of the that is probably the major issue that Santa Barbara is facing today.
The candidates essentially in our system have a basic choice. They can either raise their money from private sources, which then forces them to spend a lot of time hustling money and possibly trading off positions for support and raising the appearance of conflicts of interest and all the rest, or they can try and raise money from some clean or independent source, and public financing offers that as a source. So we have a choice as citizens. Do we support private fundraising or public fundraising? And that's the question that you're dealing with. The problem then becomes how to pay for it. Cities are increasingly squeezed for revenues. Ever since Prop 13, the revenue sources have gone down. They're desperate to fund lots of local programs, and it becomes a very difficult question of where to find that money. Tia, in Santa Monica, the city council has said that it's going to study public financing. Do you yourself, as an outsider and as an advocate in front of the city, support public financing? Do you think the city can reasonably be expected to pay for it? Are they talking about paying for it? Is this reasonably on the table, or is this kind of a little bit of a smokescreen to put the issue off?
Well, what happened was there was a council meeting over the summer, and they were going to try to get something on the ballot for November, but it wasn't specific enough. It didn't list actual monetary amounts of where the money was going to come from and how much people were going to get. So what the city council decided to do was to study it, do public outreach, and come back in November and decide if it's either going to be on the ballot or if they should just amend it in their charter. I don't really think it's a smokescreen. We'll find out over time. Although originally we did ask them to look at it in February, and it wasn't until over the summer that they actually considered it. So that could, you know, that's a red flag. I don't see a problem with the city raising money or having it in their budget. It's, you know, a very popular city that everyone wants to visit and everything. So,
Leanne, in terms of Los Angeles' system, I mean, obviously it's a fairly large city, so public financing, even at a matching funds level, must require significant sums of money. How much money does Los Angeles have to set aside every election cycle, say every 2 years, to fund candidates accepting public financing?
We the voters actually expressed in their charter change back in 1990 that created the system that the city would set aside $2 million each fiscal year from its general fund to fund the program. And that's essentially enabled us to have a fund of about $10 million. It is capped at $10 million a year, or $10 million at any given time. And that's meant to be used for all candidates running for citywide offices, mayor, city attorney, controller, as well as 15 council members. So $2 million a year doesn't sound like a lot, but in fact it's been able to provide funding for a wide number of candidates over the years. The problem we're running into is that we do think that it's probably not enough and that we're looking at ways to expand that. But it is a general fund expenditure for the city, and it's required to be made, and those funds can only be used for the matching fund system. So the one piece of advice I would have to anybody, no matter how big or small your program is, a secure funding source is really critical. I can't imagine having tried to administer this program over the years, worrying about where the funding is coming from in addition to worrying about whether the program's working.
I can't use a magic marker and underscore her remarks on radio. I'm not sure what that would be. But I do want to underscore what Leanne has just said. If you are considering adopting a public financing system, it is absolutely critical that you make sure that revenue source is stable. If you leave it up to annual appropriations from the city council or the county or whatever legislative body you're dealing with, they are under many other competing pressures, and you may find suddenly one year that that money disappears. So it's very important to create a permanent, reliable source of money, and also to consider cost of living increases or ways of increasing it, because, frankly, elections get more and more expensive. Mike, in Santa Barbara, what I gather that public financing is at least up for discussion, but finding the money is a difficult issue.
Right.
Where does a city the size of Santa Barbara look for money like that?
Well,
what are the options that you see?
Well, the general fund budget is the most obvious and available source. In discussions we were having earlier before the meeting, people have talked about a sin tax maybe on cigarettes or alcohol, and I suppose that would be another possible source. It costs so much to park in the parking garages now, and that's gone up recently. I think that's probably off the table, at least temporarily. But we could really use some suggestions on that in terms of what we have a bed tax, but that's allocated for the creeks and beach cleanup situation now. So it's going to be very, very difficult, and we're going to have to see whether there's a political will there to among the citizens to encourage the council members to look very carefully at what sources might be. I mean, saying $300,000 to $500,000 a year and only less than 0.5% out of the general fund is easy enough to say, and it's a lot more difficult to do.
Right, Leanne and Tia, you've been lucky in a sense. I mean, you have a dedicated source of funding; it comes out of the general fund. Have you thought about alternative sources of funding for cities, perhaps the size of Santa Monica and Santa Barbara? Are there other ideas that you've come across that maybe they could consider?
Discussion that we're having in the city of L.A. right now as to whether or not to expand our current system to a potential full public financing system has raised that question. And so there are some discussions and agencies in the city that are looking at that question. I think, as Mike just indicated, there are a potential variety of sources. The sin taxes, if the city wanted to adopt a cigarette tax or a liquor tax or increase those taxes, rather, we could probably do that. If we wanted to increase the hotel occupancy tax or the tax you pay when you come to visit Los Angeles, we probably could do that, but then everyone will go to Santa Monica to stay. So we have to be careful about that as a city. But I think those are possible sources. I think the real key, again, is defining which is the politically practical source and where is the political will to increase the amount of revenues. It's not an easy question. And it is something that we're having some really very serious conversations about within the city.
Another very good point. This is really a political question. The money is always there. The question is there enough political support to encourage the city to spend it for this particular purpose as opposed to 20 or 30 other often equally deserving purposes? Mm-hmm. Tia, do you think the city council in Santa Monica will be willing to spend what it takes to adopt a form of public financing? And do you think it will take outside pressure? And is that pressure there? Is there a group of advocates in Santa Monica that are willing to push for public financing?
I definitely think there's a group of advocates. I don't know if there will be enough people. We'll find out. We don't have anything scandalous happening, which I believe helped some other cities get passed. The most thing that comes up when you talk to people about it is there was someone running for city council that spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to win their seat, which they did. So I personally don't have hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I'm sure most of the women here, that would be a concern for them if they wanted to run for office.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a bit about politics and the role of outside organizations. Leanne, in the city of Los Angeles, you've got a budget. You've been there 15 years. There's an ethics commission that's well established. There doesn't seem to be a move to repeal it. If anything, there's a move to improve public financing. What's the role of outside support in all of this? Is it irrelevant in Los Angeles? Are you in cruise control, or do you need outside advocates to keep you there and doing what you do?
My staff would shoot me if we even suggested we're anywhere close to cruise control. The city has continually looked at these issues, and it is, we were talking earlier, there are a council motion to look at expanding this issue. But I think from our experience over the years, it has been absolutely vital to have outside voices helping to remind us why these rules and these programs and opportunities are important. We had them, as I said, when we first started in Los Angeles through a Citizens Commission to advocate for the proposals. We have, over the years, seen a tremendous percentage of candidates running for office willing to participate in the system. They remember and are aware of how important it is to tell the voters, we are willing to abide by spending limits. We can run within spending limits. We've heard that from our candidates. But I have to say, I think sometimes it might be a little easy to forget those those important lessons when you are struggling to make hard decisions. So I think it's vital to engage the public in discussions on where we go. And I think that really the only way that will help us move forward on any of these changes is if the folks who have to make the decisions about the change feel that it's important among their constituencies to try and make those changes. There are far too many complex and critical decisions that they're facing to have this one sort of relegated to a lower priority. I think it has to be out there, and I think the only way it happens is if there are active people reminding all of us that it's important.
Mike, in Santa Barbara, when I was up and meeting with a subcommittee of the City Council, mm-hmm. it struck me that the Santa Barbara, at least the mayor and the City Council member that were present, were very conscious of the need to build support for their proposal before they actually launched it. Why is that? I mean, do you feel that you can't act without broad city support, or is this a precautionary move, or is it essential to any kind of progressive reform in a moderate-sized city?
Well, probably all of the above, I would say. Santa Barbara's in a unique situation that as a charter city, you know, we can make, or the city can make, changes in its election system by ordinance and, you know, not having to go to a vote of the people. But having said that, in order to adopt, at least in my opinion, some type of public financing approach, there needs to be a coalition of interested citizens and local groups, League of Women Voters, civic groups, whomever it might be, that come together and go to the members of the City Council and say, this is something that we really want in terms of public financing, that we believe that this will promote a wider variety of candidates, that will remove, as Leanne was saying, the prospect of having undue influence from large money donors and special interest groups. So I think it's really crucial, and it's going to be interesting because you see what happens in the next couple of months, because I believe that the idea on the council is that they'll try to have an ordinance in place by the end of the year, if that's at all possible. And here we are in the middle of September. So they've been going out and having some public meetings. They're having a major public meeting, as I said, on October the 11th. And so we need to get this coalition together of people and organizations who see the efficacy of public financing and, frankly, contribution limits and you know, video voter and vote by mail. These are all things I didn't mention earlier, electronic filing, which Santa Barbara doesn't have as yet, and the Ethics Commission. All those things really need to be pushed by people who understand what they are and the importance of them.
Can I just follow up quickly?
Sure.
I think one of the things that's also important about public engagement is not just to sort of remind decision makers that it's important to have reform, but really what would that reform look like? Mm-hmm. You know, if we're in the city of Los Angeles, for example, and you're a city council candidate, you can spend currently $330,000 in your primary election, separate from whether or not you have a runoff. And the question when we're looking at expanding to full public financing, would that be an appropriate level that we should, you know, fund fully for candidates, or is there a reason to perhaps reduce that level? But the bottom line is, in trying to figure out what is a reasonable expectation that the voters have for what the program is going to accomplish, you know, do you think people need $300,000 to run for office for you know, 250,000 size districts? Or should it be something smaller, or should it be something bigger? I think those kinds of values are helpful to weigh in on, weigh in with as well in shaping a program that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just respond briefly on that, one advantage that Santa Barbara has, again, besides being a charter city, is that the top three council members who run in the off-year elections or odd-year elections are the winners. So we don't have to worry about ranked choice voting or having a primary. And in general, it's essentially a general election, so it makes it less expensive, you know, in terms of the amount of money that has to be raised and spent, arguably, by the candidates that are running. So that's another factor that's really in favor, I think, of a public financing type approach.
Let me just interject for the benefit of our radio audience that you are now listening to a discussion of campaign finance reform, Southern California Cities Take the Lead, hosted by the Commonwealth Club of California's Voices of Reform Project, and featuring campaign finance reform activities in the cities of Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, and Santa Monica. Tia, back to you. Politically, in Santa Monica, who are the major players that would be interested in a public financing system? That is to say, the major interests that would support it and maybe the major interests that would oppose it.
I would say the women in Santa Monica would be majority of who would support it. The people that would oppose it, I would imagine, would be the people that are in the seats right now that would be afraid they'd be unseated if, you know, women took their spots.
Mm-hmm. If it required a slight tax increase to pay for public financing, what groups would step forward to say no?
It depends on what the tax would be. We didn't even start looking into that. I know developers are really powerful in Santa Monica, so that might be someone. I'm just speculating, though.
Leanne, from the perspective of Los Angeles, do you have any advice for, let's say, medium-sized cities up to 100,000 people? Should they look at full public financing, matching funds? Are contribution limits enough? Should they simply emphasize disclosure, maybe even electronic online disclosure? Should they look at various video voter media options of giving voters free time on the city channel? What mix of reforms do you think moderate-sized cities in California ought to look at seriously?
Well, when I get asked that question, my first reaction is always, whatever you do, do it real and make it real, make it work, and make it have teeth. My own view is that I think public disclosure is absolutely critical. It not only educates the public, but it educates those who educate the public. The press has the ability to get information if we do it right and we do it in a way that provides them some understanding and meaning. So having electronic filing systems, for example, so anybody can look at that, it's absolutely critical. It's key. And having that information presented in a way that makes sense to people so they don't have to search through file cabinets or volumes of data, that's important as well. But that alone is not enough. Contribution limits certainly make a difference, particularly in terms of the notion or the appearance of corruption. But again, I don't think that's enough either. It's better than having no contribution limits, but I think it really is critical if we're going to address the issues of reducing barriers for people getting in office. If you don't want people to have to be willing to spend juniors' inheritance to run for office, or have to be people who are already in the system and who have the resources and reach into people who want to give money to you. If you want to open up the system, you need to provide some other resources for folks to get in and do that. And so I think looking at a partial public financing system, again, there are those who would say the City of Los Angeles system with the role of independent expenditures and others has been a failure. I strongly disagree with that. I think the matching funds system is a way that makes sense, and it's a start. It's an important start.
Now, I have a healthy stack of questions from the audience. And by the way, if you have questions as we go through these, please send up more. But let me start with the first one for the panel. I essentially aimed at Tia and Mike. Do Santa Barbara and Santa Monica already have campaign contribution limits? And if so, what effects have they had?
Santa Barbara only has the state limit right now.
And the City of Santa Monica is working on an Oaks initiative that we already have in place, but there's something happening, and I'm not really on top of it, but with that initiative.
Okay. This is an interesting question regarding the costs of public financing. Has anyone looked into what it costs taxpayers not to have public financing? In other words, what are the costs of a system of private donations?
Well, I'm looking to folks in the audience who probably studied this for a number of years. I mean, Tracy, maybe your Center for Governmental Studies might have even looked at that. I think what we see, and I don't have hard data, I have anecdotal information, and I have reports from the city controller's office. When you see concerns about allegations, whether, again, perceived or real, about pay-to-play, that people feel that they have to be, this is in quotes, shaken down. That's not the term I want to label it with, but people feel shaken down because they have to give, and they're worried about the possibility of not having a decision reached that's favorable to them. I think there are tremendous costs to those kinds of perceptions about democracy and about our systems of government. And I wish I had a price tag, and I don't. But I think those concerns continue to play out no matter what kind of system you have. And that just simply leads me to again, really reinforce we have to be clear what we're expecting from any system because human nature is not going to change, but we can create systems that are going to help people who want to do the right thing in a system that's healthy as opposed to one that might be a little stinkier than any of us would like.
It's very difficult to quantify. It's very difficult to quantify how much money is lost by a current system of private campaign financing. I remember years ago Dan Walters, a very experienced Sacramento columnist, estimated in one of his columns that California was one of the only states, oil-producing states, that did not have an oil severance tax. Why did it not have an oil severance tax? Because the oil industry managed to block it whenever the legislature considered it. And he estimated that that cost California about $9 billion a year. Now, is that a cost of a private system? Well, interestingly, we have a measure that's now going to apparently try and redress this on the November ballot, but it has come through the initiative process, not through the legislative process. For many years, California had one of the lowest cigarette taxes in the nation, and finally, every time a legislator tried to increase the cigarette tax, it was blocked in the legislature. Finally, that legislator and others went through the initiative process and got it passed. So, and that money went in part to health care and counter-advertising and things like that. So it's difficult to estimate what the cost of a privately funded system is, but it's a good question. They are clearly there. It's what we don't do. It's the money that's not raised equally or equitably that could be part of the problem. Next question. What are the costs of administration? How much money would it, does it cost to administer a public financing system? Who would do it? And is LA the only model?
No, Los Angeles isn't the only model, but of course we're the best model. Since New York City has a very strong, very important, good, well-run program. Of course, they also are a much larger city than Los Angeles. But I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from New York and Los Angeles to the extent we can offer them. They don't have to be the exact model. Our office, for example, we do have 31 authorized positions currently, but we don't just do campaign financing. We also administer governmental ethics programs. We advise and train candidates and city officials. We have a lobby disclosure program. We have audits, and we have an enforcement program. All of that for the price of about $2.7 million a year, in addition to the public financing trust fund. But there certainly are costs of administering it. I think the question is, are those costs worth the investment that we're making? And we would argue that I think that it does help. We hear candidates tell us that having a chance to opt into this system is the only way they could have become a candidate. And that's the sort of thing that has a big price tag on it as well, but we can't really quantify it.
Yeah, I'll reinforce that. Independent enforcement of any campaign finance law is very, very important, because if a city adopts a campaign finance reform law and then enforces it directly itself, it puts itself into a conflict of interest, because the people it's enforcing it against, enforcing the laws against, are themselves. You know, the old Pogo statement, we have met the enemy and he is us. So it's very important to have an independent group that has independent credibility and independent funding. If you don't fund the Ethics Commission, then you might as well say goodbye to it, because it can disappear. Now, as you may know, public financing programs are voluntary. That is to say, candidates are offered money. They don't have to take it. If they do take it, they have to agree to limit their spending and so forth. But there are other problems that are posed by public financing systems, in particular, independent expenditures by outside groups that are not limited in any way, and spending by wealthy candidates who say, I don't need public financing, I'm a billionaire, I'll just pay for my own campaign. So the question then to the panel is, are there proposals on the table or methods that have been worked out to account for independent expenditures in a system? If I'm a candidate and want to run for office and the city offers me $200,000 and my opponent is publicly announced that he or she is willing to spend $1 million, what do I do? Do I limit myself to $200,000, or do I say, forget that, I'm going to raise as much money as I can? What proposals are there for dealing with the problem of independent expenditures or wealthy candidates? How does LA deal with it to start with, and then I'll move to Mike.
Well, the independent expenditure issue has been one that's been growing for us in the city. There are a large number of independent expenditures, most recently from 2001 races forward. The way we approach it here, and it's not a perfect approach, but it's something that we're continuing to struggle with, where there's aggressive disclosure about the expenditures that are made. They're made reported timely before the election so the voters can have the information about what those influences are that are playing out in the elections. We also have disclaimer information so that we try and make sure the public knows those are not candidate expenditures, but in fact from a separate group. So disclosure of that of activity is important. We also have limited the ability to make independent expenditures for businesses, for-profit corporations, for example. It cannot come from their corporate treasuries any longer. That used to be permitted, but we had instances in the 2001 elections where we saw that happening on a wide scale, and we changed the law to make it so that individuals have to basically write checks to say, I want my money going to these activities. So it does force the individual to be more involved. But obviously, we can't limit independent expenditures. I think the challenge for any public financing system, whether matching funds or full public financing, is to try and make sure that we have a way to provide some resources to candidates to try and give them a way to compete with those messages that might be, you know, not their own, but recognizing that comes at a very high price tag. So there are definitely challenges out there to be had.
I think realistically, if you're a candidate, you're facing an opponent who's a millionaire, you're in trouble no matter what. There's no system that you really can think of that will equalize that. Public financing systems can give you a boost, can at least ensure that your message gets out, but may not be able to match dollar for dollar up to infinity. Mike, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how San Diego's system works, but it's been mentioned as a possible model for Santa Barbara or something that the city, you know, could consider in terms of having a cap on the amount of the individual, you know, contribution, and having contributions only from individuals for a candidate as opposed to entities or PACs or whatever political or corporate business group, you know, or whatever. I don't know that necessarily gets to the whole independent expenditure or solution to that, because obviously funds could be spent outside for candidates, and maybe you get to that to some extent by making sure that there's disclosure on who's doing the TV ad or the print ad or whatever, and what, you know, what candidate they're supporting, even if it's an ad that opposes another candidate. So I don't know all the ins and outs of that, but that's one thing that I think is possible.
This question just in is perfect for you in light of your background. Has Santa Barbara considered creating council districts instead of having citywide at-large elections, and would this reduce the cost of council seats?
Well, that's interesting, because it's my understanding that Santa Barbara had district elections by district. There are six council members and then the mayor. They're all that form the seven-member city council, and they're all elected at large now. But I believe at one point in time, I've only been in Santa Barbara about 3 years now, so I'm not I don't have the historical background here. But I believe that they've had district elections by district as opposed to at-large, and they've gone back to the at-large system, and there's some pros and cons to that in terms of the kind of brokering that you can have when you have a fairly small city in many respects. And I'm personally in favor, having come from Tulsa and been involved in the city commission at-large election scheme, where you had very little minority representation on the Tulsa City Commission, and having that changed to an election by district scheme. There were two African Americans that were elected to the non-member Tulsa City Council right in the first election right after a favorable vote of the people that changed it.
Here's a question for Tia, Santa Monica. Portland, Albuquerque, and San Francisco all have public financing systems, so they obviously have ordinances in place. Mm-hmm. Are their laws, their blueprints, sufficient so that Santa Monica could finalize an ordinance within 6 months? In other words, what's to investigate? Hasn't it all been invented? I mean, all they have to do is synthesize those three cities, and they've got it.
Well, part of it might be to educate the council members that are voting on it. So they're, you know, it's not, we're not offending them, that we're saying it's clean money and that they're getting dirty money now, and that they're actually open to the idea.
Mm-hmm. So there's a political process that you have to go through of educating the decision makers.
Absolutely.
And my guess is that this issue is very near and dear to any elected official's heart. I mean, it's one thing to vote on zoning questions, but it's another to vote on how they get elected to office. So
right.
They want to understand that very carefully.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Another question for you, Tia. As an outside advocate, do you find it difficult to get the kind of, to accumulate the kind of experience and expertise and understanding of the issues to become an effective lobbyist? I mean, how do you educate yourself on what the pros and cons of these measures are? Is that easy or is it difficult?
It is very difficult because we're not paid to be on the commission. It's all volunteer, and all of us have full-time positions. Also with council members, they're not paid either, so they're limited in their time. And also with the city of Santa Monica, city staff can't speak to the council members, so there's that sort of conflict. But reaching out to other groups like the Clean Money people, Santa Monica Ranked Voting people, people that are really involved in politics locally, some that have run for office. Someone that was on our commission just ran for the 41st district for assembly, and she ran a clean money campaign, even though it was a volunteer thing to do a clean money campaign. So she knew a lot about, you know, the system.
Mm-hmm. Here's a broad question for anyone on the panel that would like to tackle it. As many of you know, on the November ballot in California is Proposition 89, which is a very sweeping full public financing measure for statewide offices and state legislative offices. And this measure would say that once candidates have qualified by raising certain numbers of signatures or contributions, they get full public financing, and they would be prohibited from raising any more private money. This would be a major change in California law and would sort of catapult California into the forefront of virtually all states in the country, almost all states in the country. The question is, if California passes and adopts that law in November, what will be the trickle-down effect onto cities and counties? Will that help or hurt campaign finance reform efforts at the city level? Who would like to tackle that one?
I think it would help, is my initial reaction to that. I think there's a lot of – the atmosphere is right now. I mean, we've had nationally some major scandals here to the south with a congressman there, with several lobbyists. We've had congressmen from Ohio that have resigned. It's my sense, and I'm really glad to be here in California instead of Oklahoma, because I think this is such a forward-thinking state in so many respects, that if Prop 89 passes, there'll be more incentive and momentum for Santa Monica and Santa Barbara and other cities here in California to implement election reform of some type. People will have seen there'll be a lot of discussion in terms of the pros and cons of Prop 89 that I think will trickle down to the local level, and hopefully there'll be more activism and involvement by citizens in our individual communities to promote that process.
Tia, do you agree?
I totally agree. Mm-hmm. It's almost like free advertising.
Right. Here's a question perhaps for Leanne. I know that the city council, or at least several city council members, have asked for a study of full public financing or clean money, total public financing. Do you think it makes sense to slowly evolve campaign finance reform in Los Angeles and study it, or should we just go for it?
Well, I think the devil's always in the details. So even though we need to be aiming for simplicity, complexity is what dictates what we end up with at the end of the day. So the answer is sort of yes and no. We have been at the Ethics Commission studying the issue. There are other city agencies who are looking at funding questions. We're past the point of studying at the Ethics Commission, actually. We're now at the point of making recommendations. And so we will be coming to our commission on October the 10th with a comprehensive series of recommendations to offer our commission so that they can decide what they would like to recommend to the city council, and that the discussion will move forward in a much more detailed way in that way.
Several audience members have asked about process. For example, how important is the process? Is education, public outreach, and analysis more important than simply having a good solution? And another audience member asks, how important is it to increase the public's confidence in government, and can campaign finance reform help? In other words, should campaign finance reforms, in a sense, grow from the grassroots up with public understanding and support, or can they be launched in from outer space, so to speak, and just implemented and have the public grow to love them over time? I mean, is it top down, bottom up? What's the public's role in all this, do you think? Do you want to start, Leanne?
I think it's absolutely vital that they happen, that we have outside activist constituent support for these kinds of proposals. I don't think it necessarily congeals instantaneously, though. So I think when there's leadership on the issue to say, this is something I care about and I will sort of put the issue out there and really grapple with it, I think the two have to happen simultaneously. But absolutely, having a system where people believe and trust, like as I said earlier, that it's the integrity and the skill and the judgment of the people that you elect to make the decisions, that's going to be the thing that enables them to make good decisions. That comes when you have a system that is freed up from a dependency on private fundraising, and to greater or lesser extents, but I think it speaks to the core issue of confidence in government. So I would strongly argue that that's the case.
And Mike, you're nodding your head. Do you agree with that?
I do. I think to answer your question about the bottom-up and top-down, I think it needs to be both. I think you need to have elected officials who see the efficacy of election reform, and hopefully public financing is a part of that. And they need to have the constituents that support them in that effort, or that if they're somewhat neutral on the subject, that the citizen activists get behind the idea of election reform and really push it, because I think politicians don't do anything in a vacuum. Santa Barbara is a pretty progressive community, and I'm proud to be a part of it. And 6 months ago, the city council adopted a living wage ordinance, but it took a coalition of citizens 5 years to get to the point where the city council adopted that living wage ordinance. So in spite of the fact that Santa Barbara, I think, is perceived to be, you know, a progressive community, it takes a while, and it really does take the direct and very active involvement of a lot of citizens and groups pushing a particular issue. And even though for a lot of us the idea of election reform and public financing seems to be a no-brainer, you still have to do the hard work to get it done.
Before I come back to Tia, let me again remind the radio audience that you are listening to a discussion of campaign finance reform, Southern California Cities Take the Lead, hosted by the Commonwealth Club of California's Voices of Reform Project, featuring campaign finance reform activities in the cities of Los Angeles, Santa Barbara, and Santa Monica. And speaking of Santa Monica, in line of the last question, I mean, how important is it to work from the grassroots up, or can it simply be adopted at the top? Here's a question for you. Have you considered running a ballot initiative to enact public financing in Santa Monica, and wouldn't this help circumvent city politics?
we would consider it, definitely. The commission hasn't spoke about it at a meeting yet, but that was one of the things that they spoke about at city council, so we would do it. But I did also want to say that it is important to have outside help with advocacy, especially for the city of Santa Monica. So if anyone's interested, please contact the Commission on the Status of Women, because it's very important for us.
Here's a question that looks like it might be aimed at Leanne, but actually is broad enough to apply to all three panelists. The question is that special interests not only influence campaigns, but they can also influence budget and policy decisions inside a city. So has LA's system of campaign financing affected policy and budget systems? And I assume by that what it means is, has it reduced the impact of outside special interests over policy and budget questions?
Well, I look at it this way. When we have a system where the 71% of all elected officials since 1993, when our first system was first implemented, 71% of those elected have had the opportunity to partake of our public financing system and have received public funding, I think that creates a climate and a culture where those who are elected understand that for up to a third currently of their campaign spending, they're indebted directly to the public with no strings attached. And not that all money coming privately has strings attached, but I think the perception is there. So they're freed up by a third, more than zero, to actually look at the merits of those decisions. So I think the culture has actually been there's a shift in the culture that's been important. And again, identifying specific policy decisions that have been changed or that would have been different otherwise, it's hard to know.
In Los Angeles, has candidate acceptance of public financing dropped off, especially among incumbents? In other words, are incumbents continuing to accept public financing? Or once they get into office, do they feel they've got enough visibility and clout they can just go off on their own and raise more money than anyone?
It might be a variety of things for different incumbents, but certainly the open seat races have traditionally had the highest participation rates, over 80%. Overall, it's been over about in the high 70s or 80% for the city of Los Angeles, but the open seat candidates always are at the top in terms of their participation. It is the incumbents who generally are about in the 60% range. Mm-hmm. And it's generally the case that when folks run as open seat candidates, they participate. When they then run as for re-election as an incumbent, they often don't. So I think, again, Well, I think that's different for different people. There are sometimes the sense that I have no opposition, so why should I, opt into a system where I'm telling the public I'm going to be essentially feeding at the public trough? That's one argument, I suppose. Often that ties to a question about campaigns in an era of term limits, which I think is a separate issue for an entirely different discussion. But when we have term-limited races and sort of midterm races, I think that plays out as well. If you're an incumbent who has no challenger, then there probably isn't a need to participate in anything, but it does send a signal that you will not be that you're willing to sort of scare off any possible opponents that might choose to come along.
Just to follow up one more time, of the incumbents who choose not to run, not to accept public financing, what does their fundraising show? Do they fundraise very little, or do they fundraise more than they could have raised if they had accepted public financing?
Our most recent city council races show that we had incumbents who were not opposed on the ballot, who opted out of the public financing system and who raised very large amounts of money. Some council members running for re-election raised $300,000-$500,000 in their campaigns, and so there are. I think there are issues that are still to be explored.
Okay, Mike, do you have any comments on your perception that special interests affect key budget decisions and so forth, and that possibly a system of public financing might reduce that?
I'm not sure. I think if you step back and try to take a little bit of a global perspective, and assuming that you have candidates who are able to run because there's public financing available, who are more grassroots candidates, or come from neighborhood groups or civic groups or whatever, don't necessarily have I'm making a value judgment here, business background, professional background, whatever, and maybe some of those folks would be less influenced by some of similar type special interest groups. I could see it perhaps in that context, but I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I know that the all the city council members in Santa Barbara are so approachable by virtually everyone, and it's a pretty transparent process for people that want to come in and visit with the mayor, the city council members. And they deliberate things very carefully. I don't know that there's necessarily changing things would necessarily have that much of an impact on special interest influence.
Tia, in Santa Monica, I don't mean specifics, but is there a general sense that a system of public financing would reduce undue influence from special interest on city decision makers? Is that in the air or not?
Yes, that is in the air. And also I wanted to mention that since public financing reform levels the playing field for women, there may be something to do with corporations or nonprofits or whoever's donating this money. Maybe they tend to favor men versus women when they do want to give money for some reason.
Let me throw the panel a boomerang question. In other words, I'm going to ask you to ask questions of each other. In particular, Tia and Mike, from Santa Barbara and from Santa Monica, what would you like to ask Leanne? What kinds of information would most help you make the decisions you're confronting from Leanne representing the voice of experience in this discussion?
Sure, I have a question. How did it start in Los Angeles?
Well, as you indicated before, often it starts with a scandal. But I understand back in the late 80s that there were issues involving the then mayor and conflicts of interest allegations and fundraising practices. And to his credit, he created a Blue Ribbon Citizen panel. So there were more than a couple handfuls of individuals who were quite known in their communities who are appointed to this Cowan Commission, and it went around the city for over a year putting together recommendations about how the city of Los Angeles could have the toughest, most comprehensive, cleanest, and fairest set of ethics and campaign finance laws in the country. It took a year, but they ultimately came to the council with a series of recommendations, and the council chose to have discussions so that they could put something on the ballot rather than having them go directly to the voters. But it was a process that clearly engaged the public, it engaged the council members, and here we are 15 years later.
Was there a lot of media exposure?
I think at the time there was. I think there was a constant attention in the press to the stories and the issues. I think very similar to what we've seen in recent couple of years on these so-called pay-to-play allegations. I think when those kinds of issues are out there visibly, it does connect and people are looking for solutions.
Unfortunately, we've reached the point in our program where there is time for only one last question. And Mike, if you have a question of Leanne, it's yours.
I do in the enforcement area, if you wouldn't mind. The importance of having an ethics commission and how it's formed and its functioning to make sure that whatever system is adopted does work.
And let's see if we can do it in about 20 seconds.
Yeah, very briefly, it's a function of having the most independent agency you can that's structured to have the good law and the will to do independent work. But I think, again, unless you have teeth and you use those teeth on occasion when it's necessary, mm-hmm. or when you use them whenever necessary, I should say, the system will not stand.
And independent of the city attorney's office, for example?
Again, the reason the city set it up the way that we did is because they thought that it was important to have an independent agency like this to assess the kinds of administrative fines and penalties that we do assess. We don't throw people in jail all the time, but there are some places where people need to get the traffic ticket and need to know that they've stepped out of bounds.
On that happy note, I would like to thank our panelists for their contributions to this afternoon's discussion.
Thank you.
They are Mike Hackett, advisor to Santa Barbara Mayor Marty Bloom, Leanne Pelham, Executive Director of the City of Los Angeles Ethics Commission, and Tia Skulski, former Commissioner for the City of Santa Monica's Commission on the Status of Women. We also thank our audiences here and on the radio, and now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California is adjourned.